Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, June 15th. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated. Guys, there was a little bit of breaking news this morning, a lot of breaking news last night. I think we'll start with the break. What do you think, Tim Priester, the breaking news this morning that the Irish wore green versus Stanford? Is that uppermost in your mind, or perhaps Tom Loy's recruiting update from IrishIllustrated.com?
When I saw your note on that, I wasn't even aware of that, but I was well aware of the six players that Tom Loy indicated on Irish Illustrated last night that he feels good about going to Notre Dame. And generally speaking, when Tom Loy says that, that ends up going Notre Dame's way. And we're talking about Julius Jones and Braden Parks and Abraham Cisse. Parks and Cisse were in town over the weekend, and we felt good about that going into it and felt even better once they got there. Roman Iguabuike from Mount Carmel, I don't know a ton about him yet, but I did spend quite a bit of time looking at Caden Henderson, who recently canceled his Miami visit. I really like that player. We can talk about him a little bit more. And then Albert Simeon, who's one of the better offensive linemen in the country. So, you know, when I opened that story, I didn't know exactly which of the players still out there that Tom Loy would indicate Notre Dame had a great chance at. Those are six that you would like for him to say. And as I said, generally speaking, Tom's pretty spot on.
Yeah, I think Julius Jones, just because he's a legacy, is somebody, a top 100, borderline top 100 wide receiver, too. Fans have been pretty concerned by. He was definitely looking heavily at Oregon for a while. I believe he canceled his Oregon official visit, so Notre Dame got to a point where he's not even going there. And you've, like, with the Mosley brothers and stuff, legacy players, particularly at the wide receiver position, four stars haven't necessarily gone Notre Dame's way. So if Notre Dame is definitely able to get that one done, I think it'd be huge. And Roman Iwabuke, getting a linebacker from Chicago, four-star, I know that's the other position where I feel like Notre Dame's maybe struggled to cycle, which has otherwise gone really well. But if they're able to get that done, Caden Henderson, I believe, visits this weekend. So not only are they training well, but then I think he's going to be on campus too soon. So if they can kind of shore up some of those other positions, that really puts this in a place where it's a really complete class too.
And Tim, we've been talking about Cisse for, it seems like, a month now, but the edge is the only position really of these where you're like, wow, they are just hammering home. The other ones are important right now. Julius Jones would be the second wide receiver. The two linebackers would make three linebackers. Simeon is important because of his ability, but he would be a second interior offensive lineman to go with the three tackles. Parks, well, I mean, there's no such thing as not. No, there's no such thing as not enough. There's never enough interior defensive linemen because of the rotation heavy position. So while they're not needs other than Jones and maybe linebacker, that is, they fill out the class beautifully well. Cisse is just a take because he's great.
Yeah, as great as they're doing along the defensive line, you still look at the back end of the defense and wonder, okay, is that enough in one class? And like you say, the two linebackers, I really like Henderson. I'm a little concerned about his frame sometimes when I see certain plays, but he's an extremely physical football player, very, very instinctual, really quick in his pass drops. And like KVA, he's the guy that can really help you coming off the edge. So that would be an excellent catch. He doesn't wrap up all the time. He, you know, throws a shoulder into people, but these are all things that you can work on. But yeah, Tim, I agree. I mean, the defensive line is, I think we'd probably have to go back to the early 90s in order to find a list of players. We don't know if they're all going to pan out, but as you look at them at this stage of the recruiting process, a list of players along that defensive line that is pretty unprecedented, or at least in recent years for Notre Dame football recruiting.
Yeah, well, I think the only thing close was, sorry, Drew, was 2011 with Tuitt and Lynch on the edge. And Ishaq Williams was an edge, or he would be called an edge these days. He had 3 5 stars there, but adding defensive tackles, that's the big difference, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at those, if they get Simeon and these defensive linemen, I think that'd be five borderline top 100 defensive linemen and three top 100 offensive linemen, which is, yeah, as you said, pretty unprecedented. And I do want to note, too, on linebacker, that Amari Irving, I think, just visited Virginia Tech, the one linebacker commit Notre Dame has in the class currently, too. So I think there's a good chance he's trending elsewhere. So if they can hit on these other two, who I think are better prospects anyways, that would really help at this position.
And on the back end, Tim, I think we've become spoiled by the Marcus Freeman era, because if you're considering, like, they need a little bit more on the back end, of course, they have Gay, Alston, and Gamble on the back end. That's a good haul when you consider it's on the heels of Pouncey, Adams, and O'Brien. And I know, you know, you really can't go more than 2 years out anymore. You can't mention Zachary and Golden, which is also a great, and Long, which is also a great haul. But at some point, guys are gone nowadays. So it's an awfully good 2 year haul right now on the back end if you go Pouncey, Adams, O'Brien, and these three.
Yeah, and that's something that Irish Illustrated, we've always done a 2 year look somewhere along the line because, I mean, those are the two classes that are bunched together. And so they kind of work, you know, you got freshmen, redshirt freshmen. So essentially they're many times playing with the same amount of eligibility in that second year. So, yeah, you know, it's really, you know, I know we have a question in the second segment about Marcus Freeman and his recruiting, but it's just to a level now where kids walk through the doors at Notre Dame and they are set up to be impressed with everything that's happening, you know, in and around them. And then they come into the place and obviously they're seeing that this is the real deal and it's something, it's a place where they want to be. Marcus Freeman has created an environment that is inviting to high level players at a pace or at a level that we haven't seen.
It's 18 pledges as of now. These six or five of these six would make 23, 24. You'd have five offensive linemen. I'm talking about with this six pack, five offensive linemen, two interiors, three edge, two corners, two safeties, one of which is slotted for nickel. No pun intended. Two wide receivers. So you'd like another there, even after five receivers last year, because it's a heavy transfer position is wide receiver. The three linebackers, as Drew pointed out, is crucial. A couple of backs. QB tight end long snapper. That's pretty good, Tim Priester, when you're heading into mid-June. Or, of course, these guys won't all be committed by mid-June, but this is that's quite a streak.
Yeah, really well planned and has fallen into place. Credit to you know, not only Marcus Freeman, but Mike Martin and
Carter Almond, Carter Almond for sure.
And you know, that whole staff, which runs deep and is very talented. So they have, I'm not saying they've necessarily figured it out. You never have recruiting figured out completely, but they put themselves in a really good spot. And as I said, when a kid walks through those doors of the Goog these days, obviously if those players, I guess not every one of those guys were at Notre Dame yesterday, but if those players, you know, jump on board as they walk through the door, that just tells you that Marcus Freeman's created a tremendous environment.
Well, I think it was last year where they had just, I think it was one official visitor who didn't end up in the class. And I don't know if they'll get quite to that hit rate this year, but as we're seeing with the success, some of those guys that we're talking about haven't visited yet. So it sounds like they're trending in a similar direction where if they do get on campus for that official visit, to your point, they're getting in the class.
Notre Dame Director of Athletics, Pete Bavaca, was appointed to the NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Committee. He is the first sitting AD to be on the Hoops Committee. There's 12 people on that. And the College Football Playoff Management Committee, where there are 11. Tim Priester, the best news is Bavakwa for basketball will never have to recuse himself from any conversations on selection weekend.
Well, I don't know about never. I'm sure he doesn't want to hear about never, but in the short term, they're going to put out a roster next year that is just not going to be sufficient enough to get into the NCAA tournament or any kind of postseason play. Now coming up would be a time where you might want to, if you can get into one of those other backup tournaments, that would be great. But no, that's, and it's probably important that Pete Bavakwa gets a foot in there because Notre Dame has a ton of ground to make up with their basketball program.
Yeah, I mean, my main note was what you just said, that there's not going to be likely any conflicts of interest that they had to worry about with adding him to that. So I'm with you on that. But I think we're seeing just the ways Pete Bavakwa is just starting to get involved. I mean, we've seen testifying in front of Congress and stuff like that, too. So he's definitely getting himself out there, getting involved in a landscape that's really shifting dramatically. So he's getting seats at the table, which for Notre Dame, especially with their independence, obviously that's not the case with basketball, but he's getting involved in as many ways it seems like as he can to help give Notre Dame a seat at the table as they things kind of shift and shake out.
Yeah, it's such a, Tim, I immediately agreed with you on the, if you could get into like the NIT or something like that. But when you think about it now, they're still going to turn over half the roster if they get into the NIT. So yeah. And I don't even know how much that helps as much. It always helps if you make a run to the Final Four because it's basketball that people that are competitive can still watch and point to. But it is just different. It's with your one of, I guess you get the NIT a little easier, right? If they're going to have 32 teams with 76 NCAA tournament teams, if there's another tournament, that's just everybody. You can play Detroit. You can rematch the Citadel and Detroit Mercy all you want. Those would be huge March Madness.
Yeah, and you know, there's a correlation between, you know, Pete Bavakwa being on that committee and not having to worry about recusing himself and what we're about to talk about next, right, with the first-rate series, which is the wide receivers and the tight ends, because Notre Dame basketball, or let me put it this way. I mean, this is a hodgepodge of average wide receivers across the board with the Notre Dame and their 12 opponents. I mean, Miami is clearly head and shoulders above everybody else. You know, Cam Vaughn, the transfer from West Virginia, would be number one on half the teams on Notre Dame's schedule this year. But you get down to the bottom there, and it's my point being about Notre Dame basketball is in the transfer portals recruiting from the same schools that the Stanfords and the Wisconsins and the Purdues are recruiting from in football. You know, you're going to Colgate and Penn and Yale and Saginaw Valley to replace, you know, I mean, three-star guys that were recruited by Power Four teams when they were coming out of high school.
To replace Nick Marsh, too. They're not even in.
Yeah, I mean, that Nick Marsh is a spectacular player that you put up there at the forefront of the group. And Nick Marsh alone would have raised Michigan State. Where did I have Michigan State?
After five, at least, so probably number six.
I actually had them eighth.
It was pretty funny, Tim. Yeah. If I was gonna try to bring up a quibble during the series, I was like, "Huh, BYU over Wisconsin?" And I started comparing. Like, I don't care. It's about the same thing.
It really isn't. At a certain point, you know, I stress over, okay, place here, move this one over here. At a certain point, it's just like once you get past, you know, certainly Miami and Notre Dame, SMU to an extent. I mean, I look at BYU. I think there's a cutoff after the first three, frankly.
SMU's passing game with Lashley and their system is so good that, and they have returning quarterback and some returning athletes. They are clearly
BYU got Walker Lyons from USC, a tight end, good tight end. You know, but they lost a lot in Chase Roberts and Carson Ryan, their tight end. And then they had Parker Kingston, who was thrown out of school because of a first degree felony charge during, I don't know when that was, earlier this year. So, and then you start getting down into the Purdues and the Navies and Navy and Rice. Rice throws it even less than Navy did. I don't know how much Navy will throw it this year without Blake Horvath, but man, it is a gathering of very, very average receivers.
It's almost like after you get past Notre Dame's three marquee opponents, I guess we're now seeing the reason why everyone's so down on their schedule, because there's not a lot of good players on these other teams.
It's true. It's really true. And as you dig into this position by position, the opposing offenses, again, excluding Miami, because Miami's still going to be
SMU,
really good.
And SMU is
going to throw it a lot. But opposing offenses are really going to struggle against Notre Dame's defense. They just don't have the skill position personnel to beat Notre Dame's back seven.
I do wonder if it's almost a little, if I'm thinking big picture, Notre Dame, if you're going against Malachi Toney and those other guys, and those are the first time you've seen really competent receivers all year, as good as Notre Dame's defense and secondary is, I guess if you're looking for a little reason to be concerned by that might be something to point to, because they're not, SMU is obviously after that point too. So they're really not going to see a passing attack that challenges them until November.
And Tim, we get questions about Colton Joseph, you know, transfer quarterback for Wisconsin, who's a very good player. But if Colton Joseph was going against Notre Dame's 2013 collection of corners, you'd think, oh, this could be an interesting for an opener. But they're going against some of the best corners in the country and best safeties in the country. Like that mismatch on the perimeter in the Wisconsin and BYU games, two teams that are BYU's a good football team, a team in the opener like Wisconsin, Notre Dame's mismatch there is insane, as opposed to last year where they found out, man, not only do we not have a mismatch, but we got outplayed at wide receiver versus corner in the opener against Miami.
I keep going back to Colton Joseph film because I mis-evaluate him out of the chute. He's really, really good. But what does he have on the back end to throw to?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there just isn't a lot there. I'm trying to find Wisconsin right now.
They're like number eight on your seven, on maybe seven on your.
Yeah, they, you know, and they lost. Well, it wasn't so much what they lost.
They lost
well,
guys they that also weren't that good.
Yeah.
They had a horrible passing game last year. Like, they're a terrible passing attack.
Oh, they had awful. But they were the only one of Notre Dame's 12 upcoming opponents that had more interceptions thrown than touchdown passes thrown. I mean, it was so they have a long way to go. But Colton Joseph is going to narrow that gap. But again, they don't have a bunch of skill position that can beat Notre Dame's secondary.
And before we go to segment two, we should point out Preston Zinter transferred to Rice. We'll be playing tight end and apparently blocking like a maniac because Rice likes to run the football a lot. You liked Preston Zinter as a tight end.
I really liked him as a tight end coming out of high school. And I was an advocate for them. Whatever, my opinion doesn't matter. But I advocated them moving him to tight end. I think he would have probably done that, right?
They were going to.
But
they were going to move Preston Zinter to tight end. There's a difference of opinion. Now Preston Zinter is unfortunately, or doesn't, I mean, it's not, you know, here's the funny thing. It was very unfortunate in January because you really like Preston Zinter, the athlete and the student athlete at Notre Dame who wanted to come back, and they had that split in the staff GM situation. But now people don't care. Notre Dame's got one of the best teams in the country, and Preston Zinter's not going to be on it. I want to remind everybody when the transfer portal comes out and you're losing your minds because someone is leaving town that is, you know, good quality piece. You don't care.
Rice recognizes tight end ability, but they don't throw the ball. They're not gonna throw it much to him anyway. So, but good for him. If he doesn't start, he's definitely in a tandem with another guy that can't think of his name off the top of my head, but that has a little bit of experience. So he's going to play, and so that's what he was shooting for. I'm sure Rice. I don't know. Would Rice pay more for Preston Zinter, the tight end, than Notre Dame?
Because you get more in the portal.
Yeah. So happy for him because I distinctly remember in a film review saying, you know, he's not a bad linebacker, but I really like him at tight end. And so Rice found a spot for him.
We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two. We call it Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from two-star Irish fan 75, who they would no longer be recruiting, apparently, in the Freeman era. Will Juwan Sider use more than two running backs in a game, or will he stick to this traditional two-back system? Could there be a rotation in a per-game situation? I just feel like this team, if healthy, could have some playmakers.
Drew, go ahead and jump in there.
I think there's a chance that the rotation just changed throughout the season. I mean, I know he did the two-back rotation going back at Penn State too, but if you go back before, even like in 2021, before Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton were there, he did have a few guys playing some more snaps and getting involved. So I think, well, I think that is maybe his preference, and he does like to lean on two guys. When you have, I mean, all four of those guys were invited to the combine this year. Obviously, two of them from Notre Dame were the first rounder. So I do think there is a little bit difference when you have talents like that. He's going to lean on those guys heavily, whereas I think there's going to be a reason to, for instance, maybe get Jonas Walton in to give them maybe a different look and some more speed or something like that. I could see that as a possibility.
Tim, where did those two Penn State guys get drafted? I don't think I took note of that.
After the two Notre Dame guys got drafted.
I know.
That was that a very big message board commentate. That was a thing on the Penn State Notre Dame interwebs was Jeremiah Love will go first, but the Penn State guys will go ahead of Jadarian Price.
Well, I mean, from their perspective, I understand why you might have seen it that way. But
we were really like Catron Allen going into the year.
Singleton was a fifth rounder and Allen was a sixth rounder.
Wow. I love Singleton coming out of high school. We've talked about that was a devastating loss. That was a devastating loss at the time, it seemed. I wouldn't expect them to go that late, but, you know, that's the quirkiness of running back draft choices these days.
Yeah. So, pretty good point, Drew, about the Penn State guys. And I looked at Sider as a running backs coach at West Virginia and Florida as well. He still likes to lean on two. Now, he had two running backs that he liked at Florida. At West Virginia, his third back got just 73 carries, which be more than Aeneas Williams got last year. However, he had a running quarterback. So whenever you have a running quarterback, you don't have that third back.
Right.
I cannot wait to ask Sider this question. I hope we get Sider outside of early August. So yeah, you know how we rotate through all the position coaches. I would love to have Sider in later August, but it'll be mid. I guess we're not going to get anybody late. To ask him about the rotation, because look, last year it was very easy to say, I can't play four backs because you had those two running backs. Now, we were all surprised he barely played Aeneas Williams, and of course that grew. It'll be a. I think it'll be a three back rotation this year. I don't think there's any way it's two. I don't think they're. He doesn't have Katron Allen and Nicholas Singleton. I mean, Aeneas Williams might be a 1,200 yard runner, but he doesn't have. Okay, the next Aeneas Williams. I don't think Nolan James is a Katron Allen or Jadarian Price. I think it's a three back rotation this year,
unless
Aeneas Williams. Sorry.
Yeah, unless Nolan James, when he does get his opportunities after Williams, he produces. But again, a healthy Kedron Young has got to be able to give you some physicality in a running game. And you've got two, we were impressed by, we were all impressed by Jonas Williams in the spring.
Jonas Walton, yeah.
Jonas Walton. But Javion Osborne, when healthy, is a better running back.
I do too. I just wonder how far back he is now because of that. Like as Drew pointed out, and we were watching the Jersey scrimmage, Drew. You're like, it's always a bad sign when a guy that has a major wrist injury also has crutches.
Right.
Because the procedure involved his leg. I mean, that's part of the healing process. So I like Javion Osborne more than Jonas Walton coming out.
Yeah.
But I don't going into August. I don't think that's realistic to say that he's – and they're not playing five. Sider was, laughing at the notion of playing four. He did say, I've once played three. Well – I think he will twice play three.
It'll now be twice. Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Now he can say I've twice played three. We got a double question here, and it's about Marcus Freeman and recruiting. And that's why I didn't assign it to two-star Irish fan, because there's no such thing anymore. Bobby, 1556. After years of being told ND just can't recruit at the top level, Marcus Freeman has elevated Notre Dame's recruiting efforts and results considerably. Is this proof of concept for the next head coach, or will it not be replicated after Freeman? And we'll take that part first, and we'll go on to VA Doc.
Well, I think, Marcus Freeman has laid out a blueprint, but it's the same to me. It's similar to, people saying that Kurt Cignetti had the blueprint, just get a bunch of older guys. And no, you got to be great at what you do. Kurt Cignetti's a great coach. Marcus Freeman is trending, or I guess probably already is a great coach and a great recruiter. And, so I don't think that there's a formula. There's a formula for somebody that has the incredible personality that Marcus Freeman has and can really get people excited. Now, it depends who the next coach is. If the next head coach is Clark Lea, I think Clark Lea is the best choice for Notre Dame, but he's not going to have that same charismatic personality that Marcus Freeman has. So it won't play the same on recruits. And, of course, every your next batch of recruits are different. You don't know how it plays from one group to the next or one individual to the next. So I just think, I think it's really, really difficult to, just think that you can, Notre Dame's figured things out, and now this guy will be able to do the same. Marcus Freeman is the Pied Piper of Notre Dame football recruiting.
Yeah, and I think, he's obviously really bought into it too, but I think what he's done is he's gotten rid of the excuse. I think Brian Kelly really leaned on that a lot at times, that we can't get some of these kids. And I'm not saying that isn't true at times, but I think now there's going to be Brian Kelly, we'd seen them struggle at least at certain positions before, and it had been a while. So he could kind of really lean on that and maybe golf more than fans would like or things like that. But that's gone now. And I also think so too, that there's other people involved with recruiting and including what they're going to do with NIL. I mean, Ola Bobo is, borderline five-star offensive tackle. He's coming because of NIL more than anything else. Not saying he doesn't appreciate Marcus Freeman, Joe Rudolph, all those things, but he's coming because of the money, and that's something that would presumably exist going forward without Marcus Freeman if he took an NFL job.
Yeah, and Cisse as well. I mean, that changed because of the NIL offering. Look, if I think Marcus Freeman was a good recruiter in 2023, and he would have gotten Justin Scott if they could have offered him more than $100,000 in NIL money when Ohio State was offering five and Miami offered nine. But you're not turning down Miami for $800,000 more because you think Marcus Freeman's cool. I mean, there is a part of this for families and kids involved. The key is Notre Dame is heavy in the NIL game, and you have to be, or you have no shot at the best players.
Yeah.
And you have to be very well detail oriented. Talking to Mike Martin about it, man, you can offer money the kids and get them in, and then you have to restructure their contracts because they just didn't pan out right away. And that is the hard part. But once you have them there, if they love it, they don't want to leave as much either. If you love Notre Dame, you can restructure your contract. You're not there yet. You're not saying, okay, well, we're going to pay less than we thought we were going to pay you. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Drew, that was a good point, Drew, because Notre Dame clearly is the old phrase, you know, shopping down a different aisle. They are now. And it's because of Marcus Freeman, but it's also, you know, Marcus Freeman didn't have the financial backing in his recruiting efforts a few years ago, that he does now. There's no doubt about that.
Very quickly, VA Doc 88 added, given all the recent recruiting wins, does it seem that having the head coach remain at the school, because Marcus Freeman can be here for 3, 4, 10 more years, 1 more year, 10 more years. I guess 10 more years would burn him out. But so 8 more years or 1 more year. But is having the head coach remain at the school no longer a major concern for elite recruits because of the portal? I think so. I think you sign on and hope Marcus Freeman's there for your 4 years. And if something goes wrong and they make a terrible hire, you just go somewhere else.
Definitely. And also, too, like any school you go to, the coach could be gone after a year or two. Yes. Even if they didn't get the maybe the NFL interest that was very public that Marcus Freeman got last year. Like anyone except for, I don't know, Kirby Smart probably isn't leaving Georgia, but any of these other coaches could go. Anyone could have a bad season or two. I mean, even now, Dabo Sweeney seems like he's not the untouchable coach he was a few years ago.
Yeah, you know. I mean, opportunity knocks for these guys at Notre Dame with the additional NIL that they're getting. I think players worry less about the head coach leaving now because hell, they're probably going to leave. I mean, their journey is so fluid through college football. Going through all these players by position from each school, it's incredible how many guys have been to 3 and in some instances 4 schools. It's unreal. So I don't think it's as important as it once was. Is the head coach going to leave? If the head coach leaves, hell, I'll leave and get more money somewhere else.
Our next question is from Jay Jude. Who are some players whose practice impressions end up being incredibly wrong? Either you thought a guy would never contribute and did, or were sure this guy was going to be a stud and he never made an impact.
And I like it because you said practice impressions. It's not recruiting because there's hundreds in recruiting, but yeah, every way. Also, I should point out Jay Jude did include DeShaun Kizer as the obvious because we all, Brian Kelly said DeShaun Kizer was terrible in his first spring at Notre Dame. And he had a lot going on that Kelly didn't know about personally, and he was encouraging to play baseball. That's how bad Kizer was before he broke out as a tremendous Notre Dame first-year quarterback. Max Redfield is mine. When I saw Max Redfield on the practice field and probably confirmation bias because he was a 5-star, I was like, dude, that guy, I can't believe he's not playing. Remember, we kept asking Diaco, how come we can't get Redfield in? And it was over Austin Collinsworth and someone else. We're like, how is Redfield not playing? Yeah, turns out Bob Diaco might have known a little bit about his defense compared to me.
Yeah, I had him on the list. It's really, at this stage, it's difficult for me to separate what I thought of a recruit and what I thought when I saw him because there have been so many guys. That's
but,
part
like,
of it.
Your recruit would be Ewell, but when you saw Ewell, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it would be Ewell. It would be.
But you never thought of Ewell on the field as being good at Notre Dame. So, like,
no, yeah. He never showed that. I realize how the question's being asked, but I'm going to go back to Mike McNair and what we saw of his high school film, which back then, you know, in retrospect, may have been sped up a little bit, or so it appeared. You know, I thought Mike Heuermann would be.
Yeah, he looked good in practice too because he could run.
He did. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I don't know if he was ever quite physical enough for the dual role of a tight end. But, you know, Brandon Wimbush. Now, I realize that there was we saw the time where he missed the net.
That was a couple of years in. So
yeah, right. But, you know, great athlete, great arm, had some success. It's just not everybody can drop back to pass with people running at them, wanting to kill them, and look into the back end of the defense and be able to fully comprehend exactly where it needs to go. And I don't know that he ever really picked that up. Phil Jurkovic, I thought would be a more productive player. Andrew Kristofic was a guy, you know, that same class, Andrew Kristofic and Quinn Carroll, who never even, you know, gained the respect of his teammates.
Yeah.
You know, I thought those were guys that were going to be really good.
I thought in 2023 spring, I thought until the blue gold game, Tyler Buchner was looking better than Sam Hartman in a lot of those practices, especially when they had to deal with blitz and stuff. And I was not impressed with Hartman and thought Buchner was progressing in a way that then once the blue gold game happened, obviously he transferred to Alabama and that didn't go well. But I thought he was progressing in a way that was giving me confidence he could actually compete for the job. And then he just did so poorly in that blue gold game. And obviously there were probably real reasons why, but he's one that I thought was going to figure it out and never did.
All right, I have a couple quickly here. We'll move on because we could go on forever with these. All right, this should be a whole podcast in the offseason. After watching Javon McKinley on the practice field for 3 years, I never would have thought year five would turn into what it did because he was
a good point.
Way behind everything, and he looked lazy too.
Yeah,
Drew White was 10 times better on the football field than I ever thought he was in his first practices. The first time he came out starting in the spring, we're like, okay, well, this is a placeholder. We don't know who it's for, but it's a placeholder. No, it was not. Drew White was a run-attacking animal, and he was really good at it. I thought lower-level John Jones looked good in practice. Remember John Jones, Tim, the linebacker?
Yeah.
And I thought Devin Studd still looked good in practice.
I did, too. Yeah. You know, and that's where I think sometimes maybe, well, us too, but I mean, people on the outside, people not within the, you know, within the team structure, you just think that it's okay. Well, you're just going to get by with physicality and hitting people and being quick and getting to the ball.
Right.
And it's such a complex game now. It isn't even close to the game that it was when Lou Holtz was coaching. Now, you know, I realize that that's now multiple decades ago now, but you have got to be, it's difficult. You've got to be so cerebral and still play free and easy, fast and physical, while having to consider things that in the 1980s when Notre Dame was beating the crap out of people, 80s and 90s physically, you can't play the game like that anymore.
Before we go to a quick break, Chris Fink, conversely, was the guy we looked at the practice field, and he ended up being really, really, really good. So that was
in watching a lot of Cooper Barkate this past weekend. I mean, that Chris Fink, if you took it to another couple levels
and some height,
you know, I mean, Barkate's a little bit taller than him probably, but he, you know, he had a natural feel for the game. Barkate is the ultimate natural feel for the game guy. We have a question from Michael Collitz. Back in my day, there always seemed to be a lot of discussion of Notre Dame missing out on players due to academics. It seems we don't hear about that anymore. Can you recall any recent players that Notre Dame really wanted, but couldn't get in due to academics?
I think the one who sticks out and they did ultimately get in is Tay Johnson. At first wasn't going to be a take, and he had some things he had to figure out because he wanted to be at Notre Dame. So I do think that's still there. I think Notre Dame's probably also better identifying if the players can get in and who's worth pursuing, especially when you're dealing with so much money and financially and stuff like there, you're going to have to figure that out a lot quicker and make sure you're not allocating funds to somebody who isn't going to be able to get past admissions.
As Pete Sampson has mentioned on this topic, I do have one, by the way, but as Pete Sampson's mentioned, the working together, I couldn't think of a word properly, coalescence of admissions and Notre Dame coaching staff and who you can get in, it's faster. It's not like it's easier. It's faster. It's no, yes, yes, no. It's not right. Like, I don't know, let's find out after they take a test.
Everything was done with great consternation back in the day when it came to, you know, guys that were even close to the borderline. And I think Notre Dame does a good job of not allowing that to be part of the talk and addressing it right away and moving forward.
And my guy's an example of that. Brandon Hillman could have, if he did what Notre Dame asked, gotten into Notre Dame, but he didn't pursue it, we're told, and that shut down that recruitment. So I don't know if that's academics not getting you in or missing some requirements, but Brandon Hillman was told what he needed to do and didn't do it. A lot of guys like Tay Johnson told what he needed to do and did it. That's not the same thing as not getting in, but it kind of is, I suppose. It's related. It's on the topic.
They're just not as stringent as they used to be. I don't want to say not even close, because there still are academics. They're more stringent probably once they get here.
I think they know there's so much support now too, that some of it's effort. Like I remember Gabriel Rubio had a similar thing to Tay Johnson, that he put in the effort, but I think it was less about a specific GPA and more that, like, if you get here and you're willing to put in that effort, then we'll give you the help that you're going to need to succeed academically. So I think that's a big piece of it, more so than just like, because even if you have a decent GPA, but if you're just flying by and not putting in the effort, I don't know that you'll fit at Notre Dame either. So I think that's a different way of looking at it than just your grades or your SAT scores.
I have to ask you guys a question. SAT and ACT, is it true that they're not requiring those right now at Notre Dame and other schools?
I know other schools are definitely no longer requiring
those. That would help you too, because if there's a baseline that you're told you have to have and you don't have to take the test, you can get it a little easier.
Tim, do you ever walk into a classroom in Notre Dame intimidated?
No, but after an extra year or two of not doing any math because I broke my wrist and I took calculus as a junior, I wasn't all excited about it because I should have taken it as a freshman, but I had a broken wrist and you couldn't type.
Oh.
So, but other than that, no. I was told there would be no math at Notre Dame. Somebody lied to me and then I had to go do that. So there was no.
I was intimidated for three. I got in after my freshman year. I was intimidated. Well, I was an English major, so you'd walk into a class with 12 other people.
Yeah, well, that's different.
There's no place to hide in a classroom with 12 other people.
There's no place to hide if you haven't looked at a math test in 3 years either. I should point that out. Our next question from Villanova Irish. This is great. As soon as I saw this, I was wondering, as you can see by my screen name, I had a singular interest in finals. Please discuss my Villanova Wildcats / New York Knicks. And was there ever a time Notre Dame in the professional sports had such a connection on one team? Thank you for all you do as Irish fans, or for us Irish fans, unless you don't take my question.
Go ahead, Drew.
I mean, as I said on our Thursday podcast, I was definitely pulling for the Knicks. So I was excited to see the Spurs crumble a little bit in those games and the Knicks pull it off, and to see Brunson do what he did, scoring 45 in that last game after he wasn't pursued by the Mavericks. He took the big pay cut. I think it was like $113 million over his contract that he gave up so they could get a championship roster. So I think that was all pretty cool. And congrats on being a Villanova / Knicks fan. I know the Chargers for a while recently were a team that we all looked at as like they got a lot of Notre Dame players. Going back a little bit, I know like the 1988 Pistons had Laimbeer and Dantley on the team. Neither were their best players. Before Dantley got there, Trapuka was on the Pistons. And then modern, the Las Vegas Aces in the WNBA are the reigning champs. And they had Jewel Lloyd and Jackie Young on the team. This year's edition, I think, has Breonna Turner. So they do have three players. Now, none of them are their best player, but there is a roster that I think is projected to win it all that does have three Notre Dame players featured on it.
I was pulling for the Knicks, and I think people from my generation, having talked, feel that way because when yeah. I was a young teen, when they last won their NBA title, and then like if you've ever gone into Madison Square Garden, which as a kid, it's like wow, on TV Madison Square Garden, and then you go there and cover Notre Dame game when they were in the Big East in the Big East tournament. I mean, I just was in awe when I walked into that place. So I was definitely pulling for the Knicks. And man, no lead is safe, huh, Spurs? Because they could not hold 29-point lead blown in game. That was game four, right?
Mouth once in a while, guys, for crying out loud. That was something. I hated those Pistons, so I did not like Bill Laimbeer and Adrian Dantley on that team. I would say the one I can think of, and it was right when Jordan got to the Bulls, they still had Orlando Woolridge, and they traded for, or they did they trade for, they got John Paxson from the Spurs. So by having a favorite player in Jordan, plus my favorite college player in Paxson, and another favorite college player in Woolridge, that was pretty good. And when I was a real little kid, I loved Isaiah Thomas because I didn't know any better. So I liked the Trapuka-Isaiah Thomas combination. I used to try to watch. We kind of get local games once in a while with the Pistons, so it was really fun to have them. But it's been a while since Notre Dame could actually group good men's basketball players on their team. So I think the Chargers is a good point. And other than that, the NFL just hates me because Kyron Williams is on the Rams. Jeremiah Love is on the Cardinals. And it's just going to keep on getting worse, it appears.
And Price is on the Seahawks.
Oh, God. See? Price is on the Seahawks.
Our next question is from FL Irish 70. If the 5-to-play-5 rule goes into place, what current seniors would be affected?
We have talked about this on previous podcasts.
We have, yes. But it seems it's a hard one for people to grasp, but pretty much
Faison and
Talich are pretty big deals.
Drake Bowen.
Drake Bowen.
Elijah Hughes, I believe.
Yep,
which Elijah would be Hughes.
Oh, I missed him. Yes, yeah. Yes. Then that would be big.
Christian Gray would be another. And that would be it. Ashton Craig is in his fifth. Ty Washington, I think, is in his fifth. Onye is in his sixth. Jalen Steed is in his fifth.
Well, I mean, you'd love to see it for Tell. It's just personally for him because he hasn't had the opportunity.
I would think he just will. I mean, that would be a...
Yeah, I feel pretty good that it's something he would really want to consider.
Yeah, Tim, I think you mentioned about Faison would make more in a fifth year at Notre Dame than he would trying to make the NFL. And he could still play in the NFL. But that fifth year at Notre Dame compared to his first year in the NFL.
Right. My only thing for Faison is, by the way, great house. if Greathouse didn't redshirt last year, like they were, you know, trying to figure out if he could not redshirt or not, he this would have applied to him, but no one knew that rule was coming down the pipe. He could have played a couple games last year if he felt healthy enough. My one thing with Faison is if he's just got a really good year and he could be drafted on day three, I might go out just because you want to be the healthiest guy you possibly can be if you're Jordan Faison going in.
Yeah.
Your life as a healthy slot, or he'll be a slot receiver in the NFL, healthy slot receiver special teamer in the NFL.
It's difficult to project where he might be drafted before we see this upcoming season, because I think he's going to have, you know, he looked bigger and stronger in the spring. I think he's dialed in. He didn't play lacrosse. I think he's going to have a sensational season.
Yeah, I think right now, if I had to look at before, you know, going to the season, Hughes and Talich are the ones that I think would be like, oh, those guys are probably back now where we thought they were gone.
Yep.
We have a question from ND Dan 106. With only two linebackers left on the board as targets, which young linebackers have flashed, not including Faremo, or have positioned themselves to take a step forward to ensure Notre Dame isn't looking for multiple linebackers in the portal next year?
Well, Igwebuike and Henderson would help them not look for multiple linebackers in the portal next year if they bring in those two freshmen. Another thing would be getting one of the guys back. You can't bring back Snead. As we said, Bowen could. KVA, if not totally healthy, could come back, make a ton of Notre Dame, and then become a late first-round draft pick. I only say late because linebackers don't go as high, you know. And I think you could convince Jaden Osbury to come back. He's one of the guys that can make more money in Notre Dame.
Right. Agreed.
So as long as you convince one of those guys and get these two freshmen – and Faremo, I mean, the guy that's flashed, we think, is Ko Okia.
Right.
And they've spoken highly of Teddy Rezac, but, you know, speaking highly of somebody and flashing is different than, you know, 50, 55 snaps in a game, too.
Yeah, I've liked what the little bit I've seen from Thomas Davis Jr. I think he's got a lot of weight they want to add on to him, too. So it's still early, but I think they've at least probably seen enough where they think maybe not necessarily as a sophomore, but down the road, he's a guy that they could potentially see as a contributor.
Do you guys agree with adding weight to Thomas Davis Jr.? I realize it's not up to us, but what is the draw of making him into a bigger thumper at Notre Dame? Because it's intentional. The weight gain is intentional from the staff. Like, I think he talked about it. The staff talked about it. I don't see the draw in that for a modern linebacker, even in Notre Dame's two linebackers where he can play middle linebacker. I feel like, you know how much Drake Bolton has to go cover. You know how much these guys have to do nowadays at linebacker. I was confused by that, but maybe they just felt he needed to change his body. Maybe that was part
of it. Well, I mean, maybe you work your ass off in a weight room and the additional weight comes on. You know, you got nutrition-wise, I guess that doesn't happen by accident. But, Drew, I agree with you. I don't feel like I saw a lot of Thomas Davis Jr. during the spring, but when I did see him, I thought he was light on his feet. I thought he was alert. I thought he was around the ball. I don't really have much else to go on other than, you know, those are pretty good initial impressions.
Get Osbury back. That's number one.
Right yeah. There. Osbury. Osbury's good. Yeah.
Our next question is from Chris Scheiber. With the combination rosters expanding to 105 across college football and some pay for play, is it more or less likely top recruits are willing to come in and not see the field to build elite depth along the lines of what Alabama and Georgia had in the previous decade?
I'd say less because they want to establish themselves and they want to get paid.
Yeah. I think wisdom comes from age. Like, they all think they're going to be gone in 3 years and then they find out I need 4 and 5. You think Jalen Snead thought he'd be back at Notre Dame in year 5 when he arrived on campus and was challenging everybody to a race he lost?
I don't think he thought that until January. So definitely not.
Yeah, I think it's less. I definitely think it's less. But really good players have to wait sometimes, too. Really good defensive linemen have to wait sometimes, too. It's just, now I think they all think, well, a lot. The guys that Alabama and Georgia got in 2010s and Notre Dame's trying to get right now, they don't think they need 5 years to play at Notre Dame. They might be wrong, and they might be better off playing four or five years, but they don't think that way.
They, you know, when a recruit announces where he's going, they used to say, and for the next 4 to 5 years... Now they're saying it for the next 3 years. They're not even saying four.
Wait, someone said it. I was so impressed. It was in a recent countdown I wrote. Oh, it was your guy, Kadon Finley, said it about Bubba Frazier. He said for the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to make a great tandem. I'm like, wow, I like this. Oh, I like Kadon Finley more now. Yeah, that was his quote about Bubba Frazier.
I do think we've seen maybe not for like the five-star guys, like the, I don't think you would hear like a Joey O'Brien say this, but there are some guys who with NIL almost do want a red shirt sometimes now too, though, knowing that they can try and maximize that. So I don't know that those are necessarily adding the, that's not necessarily going to compare to Georgia where the, it was, oh, this guy got hurt, they have a five-star freshman or sophomore coming in. But I do think in some instances that change. And I do think this 5 years to play or five years to play five could really help with that, because now there's going to be no reason to not get certain guys more involved, and that could change things a little bit.
Wouldn't that be nice from our perspective that we're not, yes. I mean, because we're always speculating about something we have no idea, you know, are they going to play him? Is he going to exceed four games? You don't know. I mean, you assume with certain players that you're going to try to preserve it, but you don't know. I think it would be nice from our perspective writing about these guys that look, 5 for 5. Is he ready to play? Go play.
It makes sense from everybody's perspective. Fans, coaches, players, know what you have. Don't stay for 7 years. That's dumb. Final question from Vector Victor. All right. You're not familiar with this game? Let's play a game of start, bench, or cut, which means, Tim Priester, you have to cut one of these guys, bench one, and start one. And it starts out with a doozy. I'm going to go down. He has 8 categories here of positions. Leonard Moore, Benjamin Morrison, or Julian Love? Victor, diabolical. Good job.
I'm going to start Leonard Moore. I'm going to put Julian Love in reserve and cut Benjamin Morrison.
I did too.
I did the same thing. I think that's the only way. I mean, Julian Love was still a Thorpe Award finalist, so I feel like you can't be the one who gets cut.
You can't. He's a Super Bowl champion starting captain too. We can't cut him anymore. All right. This is a great one because there's, he lists 4. This is, dude's mean. You got to cut 2. Healthy Kingston Viliamu-Asa in 26, Owusu Koromoa, Jalen Smith, or Manti Te'o. Cutting one's easy because he hasn't proven it yet.
He's the only one who hasn't won a bucket, so.
Yeah. What, cutting? You got to cut KVA? Yeah. I'm going to cut Manti because I don't, you know, I mean, the pace of the game.
I agree.
The pace of the game today is, you know, it's a lot faster than it was 14 years ago.
I feel like I should just be a contrarian. I was going to say the same thing, but I think, yeah, I mean, the modern game, Owusu Koromoa and Jalen Smith playing there. I'll keep Manti. The ball finds Manti. I'll go Manti, Jalen Smith. Shout out to Manti.
Yeah, I'm starting Jalen Smith too.
Yes, Jalen Smith starts. There's
I'd have JOK and Jalen Smith.
Totally, totally believable. That's a good one so far. All right, this one's a little different. I assume he means kind of slottish receiver. TJ Jones, Theo Riddick, or Jordan Faison?
Go ahead, Drew.
I mean, TJ Jones, I think, is the obvious start. He had 1,000 yards. I think if we're going purely receiver, I'm benching Faison and then cutting Riddick. But if I could add Riddick on my bench at running back on this team, I think I would want to do that. But
dual role. Yeah, I'd have TJ Jones start. I would put Faison on my team, and I would have to cut Theo Riddick, who played in the NFL for
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah. Well, TJ Jones starts because he was a team MVP. Yeah, if you're not allowed to cheat, Faison's a better receiver than Theo Riddick. But if you are allowed to cheat and move, it's not cheating, he's on a team. I'll put Theo Riddick on my roster because he was the straw that stirred the drink. Although it was a kind of a crappy offense, but they did go to the championship game.
How about the next one?
How about the next one's tough? Kyle Hamilton, Xavier Watson, Tay-Tay Johnson.
I'm going to
college only, even though we've cheated already.
I'm going to start Xavier Watts, and I'm going to have Kyle Hamilton coming off the bench, and Tay-Tay's I'll rate him differently next year when Victor presents a similar case to us.
I agree. I think maybe if Tay Johnson gets the level we think he can, he could maybe get in this conversation, especially since Hamilton was hurt his last year. But right now, I have to agree with your picks.
Yeah, and Watts was the better, more accomplished college player than Hamilton. But if you were building a team, truthfully, Kyle Hamilton would be on my – it would be Jalen Smith and Kyle Hamilton and Leonard Moore, I think, are my first 3 picks on a defense at Notre Dame in like the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But Watts – did do more than Hamilton and in high leverage games. Kyron Williams, Jeremiah Love, Julius Jones, which was a heck of a poll because anybody else you put in here, it was going to be cut. And he still might be.
I would start Love. I would keep Kyron Williams and I would cut Julius Jones.
Yeah, it was
an easy cut if it was somebody else.
I agree. Julius Jones's last year in 2003 was pretty good, but I think Kyren in a modern game adds a little bit more too. But it was close. But I think Love is the obvious starter.
Bubakar Traore, Julian Okwara, and Isaiah Foskey.
I would start Okwara, and I'm conflicted because we haven't seen the best of Traore.
Right.
And Foskey disappeared many times against some of the better competition. I'll bank on Traore reaching his potential and keep him on the team.
Yeah, I wouldn't start Julian Okwara only as a junior, though, because his junior was incredible, but I do not want him as a senior. And then I would bench Foskey. He did have 11 sacks, but I agree. His pressures were never as impressive. Whereas Okwara, I think, had like 60 pressures his junior year. And then I think Traore might be ahead of Foskey after this year, but I'm not ready to say that yet.
I agree with you on the junior year thing, Okwara. But I would also, I agree with Priester. I'd take Traore's possibility, and I would cut Foskey from this trio, which is just quite a thing. This one's fun. CJ Carr, 2026, Jimmy Clausen, 2009, or Brady Quinn, 2005. God.
Drew, you go first on that one.
I have start Brady Quinn, bench CJ Carr, and I'm cutting Clausen. Because honestly, whoever has to throw to Tate Floyd and Kyle Rudolph is who actually would get to be the starter. So I even though he had maybe, I know he completed 68% of his passes, I don't give him as much credit as maybe I should.
At the time, I predicted that Brady Quinn would go lower in the draft than originally projected because I didn't think that he was accurate enough for the NFL. So he's my cut. I'm going to maybe I should cut Clausen because I'm not going to start him, and he would be a disruptive presence on the team if he were. I don't know. I don't have that one completely figured out. But I think CJ Carr – well, Clausen was tremendously accurate. I'm going to punt on that one.
I was going to change a little. It's question number 9, right, Jack Freeman? So I'm going to start CJ Carr for crying out loud. This podcast is about to end. Brady Quinn is on my bench, and I am going to cut Clausen for a great point by Drew Mentok. I mean, that wasn't exactly the most difficult task in the history of the world, going to Tate, Floyd, and Rudolph. And also, Quinn, you wouldn't punch in the face because he would punch you back really hard, and you wouldn't want to go that way. So I'm going to go ahead and go Carr, Quinn, and cut Clausen, who has arguably had the best statistical year of a Notre Dame quarterback for one season.
I'm going Carr, Quinn, Clausen for the record.
Carr, Quinn, Clausen for the record. And it's question number 9, so we're not cutting CJ Carr. This one is pandering a little bit. John Sott, James Rendell, or Tyler Newsome? Obviously, we're all starting John Sott. Who do you guys cut?
I cut Rendell.
See, I'm gonna start Rendell. Actually, he averaged of the three, he had the best single season yards per punt average, and I think didn't get a lot of opportunities to show it last year. But I think I would go with him. Actually, he had his 44.6 yards per punt. I think Sott was 43.9, and Newsom's best season was 44.5. But it was actually his first year. He progressively got a little worse.
There's a lot of hearsay going on this podcast, apparently. I want to point out, John Sott goes to Ohio State to start opening game for Notre Dame, transfer from Harvard, and unleashes a bomb from his own end zone. He is the starter because he is clutch. That's the guy. Anyway, that was fun. Victor, that was an impressive collection of start, bench, cut, and it was really mean that he threw in 4 at linebacker because that made it tough on all of us. We'll be back on Thursday with another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. We'll see if there's more recruiting news. Probably won't be quite as big of a recruiting update between now and then as we had over the weekend from 24/7 Sports' Tom Loy. Until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Mentok of Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening. Irish Illustrated Insider.